There's another quote that's like, don't die with your music still in you. And I think you still got a lot of music. That was Dr. Wayne Dyer. And I think you still got a lot of that music in you. So you haven't even tapped into it yet. You haven't played any of the music because it's just, you know, kind of sitting there unfinished. And you're blaming it on you not being passionate anymore, but you are really passionate about it still.
Of course you're passionate about it. That's the problem.
Yeah. And so just let it go.
Chill out a little bit.
It's not precious.
Chill out.
Actually, you should make it your goal to fail at it.
Look, people will judge it anyway, dude.
Yeah.
People, trust me. People can't wait to tell you how much you suck at something.
You're like a perfect thing.
You're never going to have a perfect thing. You're going to have something that you're going to judge more than anybody else does. So
yep.
Just do it.
Just do it. Do it. Just do it.
Exactly. Like what Al Pacino said.
Mm.
Oh. In Any Given Sunday. A great movie.
Okay. Hello, welcome back to Shit They Don't Tell You. I'm Nikki Limo.
Hello, everybody. It's Crypto King here.
Nice drip there, Crypto King.
I didn't drip. I actually put the cup back. There was no spillage.
No, your drip.
What do you mean?
Your drip.
I'm dripping?
No, I was complimenting your outfit, the fit. Do you have a cocaine problem now?
No.
Did it come with the outfit?
No, I thought, okay. What are you talking about?
Are you okay?
I'm great. I'm better than ever.
Do you want to introduce yourself?
Crypto King, hello.
Okay, well.
Normal, just a normal.
We'll leave that over there.
Can we have a normal introduction?
We'll just leave that over there. We'll leave this, whatever this is.
Perfect.
Sitting over here. If you're just listening on audio, you'd have to come to the YouTube channel to even understand anything I'm talking about.
It's just a normal, everyday introduction.
It's ineffable. I can't describe it to you.
I honestly think that the people who regularly listen to the Shit They Do Not Tell You About podcast are just going to be confused about what you're talking about because everyone's just sort of used to the show. But you're acting like the show's like, is this like the 500th episode or something?
No.
Okay. Yeah, nobody.
No, it's not.
Nobody really cares then.
Oh, okay. They don't care about our show?
No, they don't care about whatever you're trying to, whatever kind of controversy you're trying to drum up.
Oh, your rebrand.
No, you're trying to drum up controversy. People get it, though.
That's what I do.
Yeah, people get it, though.
All right, why don't we go into answering questions from people?
Please.
Is that okay with you?
Get back to business.
Is that okay with your new brand?
I don't have a new brand.
Oh, okay. My bad. You look hot.
I know.
I'm turned on.
Let's not be sarcastic. Let's be honest.
Okay.
You're not just turned on. Mm-hmm. There's a nuclear meltdown happening between your legs right now.
So we got questions from you guys that we asked if you wanted to submit.
They're going to send that into the ocean.
Any questions that you want on any subject. We are not experts, just a disclaimer.
Or surround it in concrete. Responsibly dispose of nuclear material.
If you wanted to
always
submit a question on any topic, you could submit to podcast@nikki.limo. That's podcast@nikki.limo, as some of these people did here. Jumping right in. I don't read these beforehand, so we're just going to have to dive into this together. This one is titled, BBC Ebony Male Challenges God's Authority. Okay.
Let's hear it.
Yo, what's going on, Nikki and Steve? It's the young hot nerd Patrick here. What's up, Patrick? Hopefully you don't remember my last time writing to you because Jesus fucking Christ, it was bad. Apologies for giving you secondhand anxiety, Nikki. I don't remember, but I do believe that I probably got secondhand anxiety from it. Yeah. I'm happy to say I'm doing much better now. I got a new job with new friends. I'm about to start therapy and I've become a Patreon member. All right. Sounds like you're on the freshest path.
Go.
Subscribe to this guy?
You sound like a fucking woo holder over there, bud.
All right.
Let's go.
Tone it down. Oh, yeah.
Winning only.
Compliments. Nikki and Steve, y'all are some cool cats. Thank you so much.
Hey,
That was a great compliment.
You have no idea, actually.
I do.
How true that is.
I have a very deep idea of how cool of cats the both of us are.
Okay.
Anyways, I have two questions, but I'll make them quick. Basically, I don't currently believe in God or a higher power. I think my beliefs align more with Stoicism and Buddhism, but my mom is a strong conservative Seventh-day Adventist, which is hard to explain, but it is what Joe from JK was raised as. She is already seeing that I'm not following the same little rules she raised me to follow, but she doesn't know how I have fully stopped believing. How do I tell her that I don't believe anymore, or do I wait until I move out to tell her? Also, if you feel comfortable to answer this, what do each of you guys believe? I'd love to hear some other perspectives. Next, this is more of a Nikki question, But
well, first, let's get to the first one.
Okay.
Just send her clips of Joe. I think if you send her clips of Joe,
mm-hmm.
and you go, this is like what becoming a Seventh-day Adventist brings you, then maybe she'll be like, holy shit, we got to do this a whole nother way. So like, just send her any clip of
Joe. Any clip of Joe.
Honestly,
any clip.
Any clip.
I'm not sure what a Seventh-day Adventist is.
It's a whole thing. So it's like, you know, Joe Joe and my buddy Ryan Amay, right?
Uh-huh.
They were both raised Seventh-day.
Seventh-day.
They have to Adventist. Do things a certain way, and it's all very strict. And like, it depends on how strict your parents are, because even Joe and Ryan Amay have a little bit
uh-huh.
of variation between them. By the way that they were raised, but it's Joe's mom was extremely fucking strict. Randomay's parents were extremely strict as well. So it just really depends. But look, just show them the result of all that constrictive tightening.
Oh, they're not allowed to have alcohol, tobacco, drugs.
Yeah.
Oh, that's why Joe did so many drugs, probably.
Yeah,
You just end up becoming the opposite of your parents. See, this is what
Joe cleaned up now.
I don't have a problem with, you know, any religion. Whatever you want to believe, believe it.
Yeah.
But I will say I have noticed a trend of the more extreme your parents are, either one way or another, let's say they were extreme Christians, I've noticed that it leads to the kids becoming atheists. And not just atheists, but like vocal atheists. Like
your childhood
friend,
I won't mention her name, but mm-hmm. come on. She was like the strictest, most religiously raised person.
Yeah.
She went the other way, in such a way that she ended up getting gangbanged and shit, bro.
And Wiccan and all this stuff.
Oh, bro. Like worshiping like Mother Nature and shit.
Okay.
A nightmare.
Then there's also just like mutual friends that we know that I won't name names or anything, but like they are super, like their whole brand is being atheist to the point where they, I feel, are more preachy than most religious people I know about how atheist they are.
That's a lot.
And like
too.
They
it
go,
becomes a religion too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I always found it fascinating because I don't feel like it should be that extreme of a, I have to put my foot down and say this, like, believe what you want to believe. It's supposed to be your own spirituality.
Yeah.
So if you're atheist, just be atheist. Why you gotta like yell from the rooftops how atheist you are?
And I've met some dope atheists, but she's talking about like the people who just take it to the umpteenth, right?
Well, because
it's like you're a fucking fan of the color gold, and it's like, oh, now you gotta wear gold like all day, every day,
I've known some really devout religious people whose parents were like all fucked up and not believers, and so they found, you know,
that
religion
too.
To give them some structure in their life. So,
well,
you know, it goes vice versa.
Maybe their childhood friend had religious parents.
Yeah.
And they got pulled in that way and it gave them like direction. It was good for them. And so it gave them structure and they needed it. But then like, I've almost never heard a story about like somebody who like became atheist because they needed structure.
Yeah. It's always like to get away from the structure.
It's always to get away from the way too much structure, which is beautiful too.
Yep.
It's just, you know, there's yin and yang always.
You tend to like overcompensate for trying to get away from that structure.
And then sometimes because you got so wronged by the one thing, by the one side, which I had a buddy who got so wronged by religion that he would never even hear it again afterward because he went the other way.
Yeah.
But it's like, okay, dude, but there is a beauty to the middle, I think. I mean, for me personally anyway. Like, I think me and Nikki are more agnostic.
Yeah.
Like, we don't, you know, I don't have the balls to just sit here and say, there's no God, final answer. You know what I mean? Like, I can't do that.
Yeah, I would say I'm a little bit more spiritual than that.
Me too.
Don't care what label you give it, but I do think that there's like,
I think that man
a
corrupts.
A very creative, like, energy.
And I think that man corrupts it nonstop.
Absolutely. Because it's not something for man to figure out.
Exactly.
You know? And,
or
and
to
men,
even communicate.
They try to, like, exactly. They try to, like, put their stamp on it and, like, try to dissect it and analyze it to death and, like, try to figure out exactly what it is. And it's really just not that. It's just not something to be figured out that way. But there are a lot of scientists who are religious because of that, because there's so many things that can't be scientifically proven that there are like some definite mysterious things.
Might as well.
I think agnostic is a term for saying like, hey, I'm okay with saying I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
I'm not going to give declarative statements like I fucking know it all. And not that you guys do if you're on the one side or the other.
Mm-hmm.
We're not criticizing you. It's just that we find there's a fascination in the unknown and there's a beauty in admitting that you don't know something that I've carried throughout my whole life, which has only benefited me. Like the curiosity of I don't know enough to put a period at the end of the sentence has served me very well.
Exactly. Because when you know everything, then you stop learning.
You're boring.
And then as for what we believe, we touched on it, but both of us were raised Catholic. I was raised super Catholic. And I personally like to borrow ideas from every religion that I've learned about after I decided not to be Catholic anymore, because you have to go through this whole like very official ordeal, when not communion, but the one after, I can't remember what it's called, but you have to get a sponsor. It's a whole thing. Well, that's when I decided to drop out of it because I was like, I'm just not into how strict that religion is, I still like believe in God and I believe in Jesus and stuff. And so then I went to like this Christian, not camps, but like those, what are they called? The youth groups.
Yeah.
The little youth groups.
I did those.
And I had crushes on the guys and stuff. So like, okay, cool. So we're in the same boat.
I had crushes on all the hottest, biggest titty bitches.
See, we would have been in the same youth group if we went to the same school.
No question.
So that was cool for a little bit. But then my youth group leader told me that I can't listen to Eminem because he... Yeah. Is like
he was upsetting the Chaneys at the time.
Yeah, and he was like, you know, cursing a lot and like, you know, slamming women. No, it wasn't even political. It was just they didn't like how much she called women sluts and stuff.
He was just talking about his mom.
I know. That's what I said.
That's what I tried to
that's
say.
That's what I said. And so basically, it just rubbed me the wrong way. Because again, the reason when I went away from Catholicism was because there's so many strict rules of like, you have to do this or you're going to hell. And it's like, I think if you're a good person, you're not going to hell. Like what? Like what?
Yep.
Like why would you get punished? Or if you're Jewish, you're going to hell. Or if you're like any religion that's not like Christian, you're going to hell. And I remember being obsessed with Adam Sandler at the time too. And so he's Jewish. And I was like, that doesn't make sense. Like, why would he go to hell just because he's not Christian? That's so stupid. That's like so dumb. Yeah. And like, even as a 13-year-old kid, I was just like, I just don't buy this. Like, people can be good people and not Christian. And
but did you hear the Hanukkah song?
It was great. I love the Hanukkah song. You don't like it?
Well, no, it's not about...
You got a better song?
It's not about if I like it.
What?
It's just, shouldn't he go to hell for that a little bit?
Not for me, because thou shalt not cast judgment upon others, which I think feel like the Christians do.
Like, imagine if he did
sometimes.
You know, Frosty the Snowman. Like that's that
not
gets even, you in.
That's not a Christian song.
That gets you in.
It's about a snowman that's magical. In fact, that's a Wiccan snowman. Like that snowman has magic powers.
No,
only that
it comes from Jesus.
100%. That's not what Christians would say.
Comes from Santa.
No, as Christians would.
Flaws.
You can't. You're worshiping false idols.
Saint Nicholas.
False idols.
He actually was alive. He lived.
I don't care.
So there you go.
We're talking about him. Why are you? He's not Frosty.
Toys away.
He's not Frosty the Snowman. That's a whole different thing.
They were his buds.
A fucking snowman that comes to life and has magic in a hat. That's satanic.
Reindeer were his friends as well.
Anyway,
this is all confirmed historical accurate. Thank you.
So I stopped going to church and youth group, and then after college, I did a religious philosophy class, and I learned about like Buddhism, and I actually really liked Buddhism.
That was my favorite
a lot.
One.
Yeah, because Siddhartha. It actually, they have a lot of the similar teachings of Christianity. Yeah. So Jesus said a lot of the same shit that Buddha said. And I think that it just gets too interpreted in a strict way and turned into dogma because of people trying to like tinker and get power from it. And that's what I don't like about structured religion.
But the best thing about Buddhism, and I don't know if you've been around too many Buddhists, but I actually had a buddy whose parents were Buddhists.
Mm-hmm.
And they think that Frosty the Snowman is a dope song.
Bart's mom thinks Frosty the Snowman is a dope song.
No,
dope
it wasn't
song.
Bart. It wasn't Bart.
Well, Bart's mom was Buddhist.
My friend Kyle when I was a kid. But.
Well, ask Bart's mom. I want to know.
I will.
Directly from her.
I probably will. Okay. We'll probably get on a hot seat and we'll do it.
So anyway, sometimes I get comments on here that are like, you need a relationship with Jesus. And I'm like, I have not lost a relationship with Jesus. It's weird because like, I'm not like, I wouldn't label myself a Christian, but I still like believe in a lot of things that from there. And then also I really like just some of the esoteric, more like energy stuff, like where I think that when you're in alignment with purpose in the universe, like if you want to call it God, the universe, the flow of things, I think there's a spiritual je ne sais quoi that can't be explained by science.
But I think it kind of can be too.
I mean, everything's energy.
Absolutely.
But where does this frequency come from that puts you in the flow of things? Like where the athletes get in the flow of things, like where is that energy coming from?
Well, look at these new images that we're getting from like
NASA's.
The NASA's, right?
Mm-hmm.
Looking at sick imagery.
Yeah.
James Webb Telescope, fucking shout out. They're using gold plated fucking mirrors and shit to like pull.
Like your sunglasses? You
know, protons from the universe. Yeah, kind of. But like, and my whole outfit, but like to pull all, you know, light from the universe and like to analyze it. And then like we can actually collect it and kind of see our origins. And yeah, the more that I think that they research, the more that I think that we're surrounded by light and energy and like all the things that I believe personally anyway.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's very easy for me to think that like, you know, we're both infinitesimally small and yet at the same time, in the beautiful way,
yeah,
we're just as big as anything that is the biggest thing because we are all connected. And that it only gets confirmed to me, and maybe that's my own recency bias or that's my own like confirmation bias because that's what I'm looking for maybe when I see that stuff. But
no, I feel a connection to a lot of like plants, animals, things.
100%.
Ocean, especially when I'm floating in the ocean. But that's because I think we all came from the same source. And I think when we die, we go back to the same source.
Yeah.
And you can call it a variety of things as it's called in a variety of religions.
We're but all I made think of the same shit, though.
I think they're all talking about the same thing.
Yep.
So
yep.
Anyway, that's kind of.
And also, too, I just have felt that way always, like since I was a kid.
Yeah.
And it's never been interrupted. Even so, there's temporary things that interrupt that, like the Catholic Church and like all this other stuff that interrupt that maybe a little bit. But then when I get back to my own like mean, like the regular shit for me, then I'm like, oh yeah, I really do feel this way still.
I don't know if I had such a like solid like this is how things are when I was a kid. It was more like I have always had this radar, like meter inside that like when I'm guided towards something that feels very true, it's like ding, 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 it's very true.
Yeah.
And then like when it's something that feels off, it's like there's something off about this. And like, and so that's how I felt about Catholic religion where I got to a point where I was like, I like this over here, but like there's something wrong here. Like right. I don't know what it is. I can't put my finger on it, but even since I was a kid, there's always been this innate intuition that's like guided me towards like what I think is truth and real. And I've just always followed that, even if it's against the grain or whatever, you know, my friends or family wanted me to do. But my mom was always very cool about that. She always like kind of let me choose my own thing. She's very like freedom enforcing.
Nice.
Which is cool. I feel very fortunate to have been able to choose. And I think because of that is why I never went extreme about anything. Never went into drugs, never got into like, because she was really free about it. She was like, hey, you can do that, but like, just so you know, like this could happen to you. And then it made me not want to do it.
Well, my parents did this shit to me, which was a little different, where they're like, you're the oldest, right, brother? So like, you know, I have an older sister, but I have two younger brothers. So my mom always put the screws on me. Like, you know, your brothers are looking at you and they're going to always look at you, Steven. They're always looking at you, Steven. So like, you better not do anything stupid because if you do it, they're going to do it. And so I was like, fuck. So I didn't even fucking have a drink of alcohol until after I was 21.
Square.
I know. I didn't do, and you know. When I found out later, both my brothers getting fucking stoned and shit. I didn't even know. I was like sacrificing like all that shit for them. And I didn't even, like, just to be a good example or whatever. And then I found out later that they're doing it anyway. And so, and my other brother's fucking hotboxing my other brother. So I'm like, cool, this was worthless.
See, you get rigid rules put on you. This is what you end up like. Extreme. Extreme rebellion.
I rebelled later.
I can tell.
Much later.
I can tell. All right. The second part says, Nikki, this is more of a, next is more of a Nikki question. How the fuck do you know which hobby to focus on mastering? I have a lot of hobbies that I would like to dive deeper into. I just don't know which one to focus on first. I'd like to make money eventually from any of them, but I do all of them without pay anyways. Money isn't really a driving force. It would be just nice to have. Thanks for reading. I don't know how I choose. I get really fucking interested in something and then I can't stop researching it or paying attention to it. And like sometimes I wish the hobbies would last longer. Like, you know, I was really into bullet journaling for a long, or sticker making. Yes. I was obsessed with sticker making. I was
your
like,
cricket was getting use.
I want to quit everything I do and just make stickers all day long. Like that's all
what
I wanted to do.
You'd be so screwed right now.
I know. I would, I mean, and that's why I really have to take my time. I have to put myself through like a 5-point test. Like, okay, like what if this really was your thing? Like, would you get sick of it? And I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sick of it.
Yes.
So
quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say get obsessed for as long as that like passion is really there. And if it goes somewhere, cool. And if not, it just wasn't meant to be something forever.
Amen.
But there are some ones that stay forever. Like, I think that poker has been staying for a very long time. I mean, it's always been something that I've been interested in since I was
I've never seen
younger.
You more interested in something than poker.
Yeah. It utilizes all of my brain, like
and
the creative, the analytic, everything.
You can go do it anytime you want.
Yeah. It's easily accessible.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, with acting, you could only do it if you were hired to do it.
That's it.
And then in class, I guess, but it's not like real.
You can make fucking YouTube videos wearing wigs.
Yeah.
Opposite yourself.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? Like, it's not, you're not acting. Like
yeah.
acting is like, you know, being in a scene. You're in like a room and it's supposed to be different than where you are. And like, you're with somebody and you're supposed to be pretending about something.
Yeah.
You never get to do that shit.
The only other thing I felt this way about was stand-up comedy. And that was like, same thing where I couldn't wait to go home and write jokes and like hone them and then go back out and like workshop them
at open mics. What do you get? 15 minutes? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, if that, like,
yeah.
usually at those shows, you get like maximum 10 minutes.
Yeah, you can't. It's so much more difficult to hone it. So, like, what you were able to do, and you know, people were asking me this today because Nikki does a Twitch stream.
Oh, yeah. If you are interested in poker, twitch.tv/TrickNix. I'll put a link in the description.
And somebody was asking me today, I don't know if you saw any of this because you were very dialed in.
No.
But they were like, hey, Steve, did you ever worry about, like, you know, the way that people can get degenerate about poker
mm-hmm.
with Nikki, like when she first came out with like, I want to do poker, were you ever worried about it? I'm like, bro,
that's fuck hilarious.
No. I know it is, but
I mean, I get
it's
the
a great question.
Question.
It's a great question.
I understand, but
normally,
just
yes.
thinking of me,
it's
just
insane.
It's really funny.
But I was like, dude, like honestly, like Nikki didn't even fucking start playing poker live for maybe 6 months after she started like hardcore.
Yeah, studying
this shit.
I did a
she
lot
didn't
of play
want
money.
To go either. It's not like I wasn't like, hey, do you want to go? And she's like, yeah, but then I stopped her. She's like, no, I don't want to go. She didn't want to fucking go until she felt like she understood the ins and outs.
Extremely comfortable with sitting down.
And that was her. Like, she was the person who found the hobby, and then she's the person setting the limits for herself.
Yeah.
But people don't know that either. So it's like, you know, I put it probably wrongly earlier. I said Nikki's the most risk adverse person that I know, but you're not. You're the most financially risk adverse person that I know. You're more goal oriented wise. You're able to risk whatever the fuck.
I think calculated risks.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But financially, you're not going to bet it all on something that you're not sure about ever.
Never. No, I'm not high variance.
Hell no.
Yeah. But
and
I mean,
you set limits for yourself initially
totally.
Without even me talking to you about it.
No.
So like, but the idea that like, Nikki comes at me and she's like, I'm just going to start gambling with our savings. I understand how people might think that that's the case, but that is so the opposite of what's going on that it's hilarious. Nikki's so calculated.
I mean, I've said this before in podcasts when we talk about poker, but I only ever put in $1,000 into my bankroll. And even that, I was like, $1,000 or like
you
out
what
of
your
our
percent
savings.
Gain?
I don't know what the percent is in
you
the thousands.
You have it.
I do have it, but it's kind of like been skewed a little bit because I played the main.
And you crushed it.
But I played the main event and that was the $10,000 buy. I've probably spent like $20,000 since that win, but it's still like I put in $1,000 and
she only ever put in $1,000 in it.
And it's at over $120,000 now. So
I think we're okay.
That's basically in MTTs, it's been a 402% ROI. And in cash games, it's been an 11% ROI.
Insane.
Yeah.
What's MTT stand for?
Multi-table tournaments.
Yeah.
Yeah, but basically, I put in $1,000, and at the year mark of me keeping track of it, it was at $138,000. It's now still over $120,000, but I just like bought a bunch of like really expensive buy-ins that like kind of skewed the numbers. I normally wouldn't, even after winning that much, I normally wouldn't spend $20,000 on buy-ins, but I was staked for half of it. See, even then, I was like staked for half of it. But yeah, so I've only ever put in $1,000, and within a year made over $138,000.
Yeah, and that, but that's, you know, not surprising to me.
But I, yeah, it was very calculated. It was very like, I don't know if I want to turn this into a full-time thing. So I'm very clear about it being a hobby. I'm very clear about like balancing out with work. And if, and whenever we go to the session, if we lose this much, we leave, blah, 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 blah. And I'm only doing it as long as I'm passionate about it. And I just kept staying passionate about it. And so that's, I guess, how I decide is like, I don't really feel like it's my choice, but because I'm going based off how passionate I am.
Yes.
But it's, I don't pick it. It's like you don't pick who you fall in love with.
Yep. And what's going on? You okay?
I didn't get to choose who I fell in love with.
Oh, I thought you had like an itch in your nose or something.
Nah, just something in my eye.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so no, I did get to choose who I fell in love with. This is really beautiful.
Who?
The one that got away.
Who? I'll kill her. Where'd she go? You know why she got away?
I won't tell you. I want her to live. I love her so much.
I plucked her from the universe.
it's one of those things, though, where when it comes to you and poker, having watched you, having been your biggest fucking fan since we got together, since 2013, and I really am. I'm Nikki's biggest fan ever. No question, she knows
that's very true.
There's no question.
You know, when he first was like that, I was like, okay, I mean, it's new love, like he could be a fan for like a year and then stop being such a cheerleader, you know. But no, he's like actually the most supportive person I've ever encountered.
Look, I have Nikki's back to the moon and back, right?
Yeah,
to the moon. And I say and back because the moon can hurt you. The moon hurt me lately. I went to the moon with my cryptos.
The Luna hurt you?
Yeah, and the moon hurt me bad. You know what I found out?
What?
You really, really, really want to go to the moon, right? But there's a reason why they have spacesuits.
Mm.
You don't want to stay on the moon.
Is that why you got a spacesuit now?
No, this isn't a spacesuit.
It looks like a spacesuit.
No, this is just my like regular attire.
Oh, gotcha.
But like you want to go to the moon and then tell everybody that you went to the moon and you want to get the fuck home as fast as you can, like what the Apollo astronauts did.
Yeah.
But like what I did is I went to the moon. I hung out there for like a year.
Like an Umbrella Academy.
Yeah, it's like, bro, get the fuck off the moon. Go home, dude.
You were like Matt Damon in The Martian eating potatoes on Mars and you had to cut like a little tiny piece of potato.
I did.
Because you got so poor on the moon.
I know.
Well, on Mars.
I had to go land on my own rover, fucking sucking gasoline out of that shit.
Ew.
It was a nightmare.
It's crazy.
Thank you.
So I'm glad you support me to the moon and back since it has so much fond memories for you.
Well, it doesn't actually.
Okay.
It's a nightmare.
Finish your point.
No, but watching you and rooting for you has been one of the funniest things I've ever experienced in my personal life.
Yeah.
Because it seems like whatever you're going to do next, and whether people know it or not, you're going to fucking crush it at it. But then people might not even understand it until later, until much later. And so, you know, for years, I told everybody that, like, you're my sitcom wife. And, like, you know, there's a bunch of people out there who are like, yeah, Steve thinks he has a sitcom wife. Oh, what? He wakes up and his wife's making oatmeal and she usually eats cereal. I'm like, yeah, dude, no, it's actually much more intense than that. much, 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 much more intense than that, actually. But then I think when everybody in our personal lives, especially who know you, but they don't know you inside of these walls like I do.
Yeah.
See you in the World Series of Poker final table, fourth place out of 5,700 people. I think that holy fuck, what the fuck is going on for them was like me waking up and being like, what's Nikki up to today?
Yeah.
But like that's normal for me. But they finally, like, the world got to actually see what I normally see, which is like, what the fuck is she up to now?
Mm-hmm.
But in like a much quicker way.
Yeah.
Because I saw this happen over like 8 months.
Right.
Instead of like what everyone else saw, which is
what,
like,
what did you think at the beginning?
Oh, when you first wanted to play poker?
Yeah.
I know never, ever, ever to doubt you. Ever. And I'm not even kidding.
Yeah.
Like, that sounds like a joke, but I really don't doubt you.
It sounds like I threaten you, but it's not that. It's
No, if Nikki does something, she's going to do it hard.
It's just like, it's like, it seems random.
It does seem random, and but she's going to go hard on
it. I go so hard that,
and
like,
sometimes you're like, oh, Nikki, why does this have to be about how much you love this grasshopper and how you need to learn how grasshoppers can live?
Like, what do they eat?
Like, oh no.
What's their base temperature that they need to be at?
Why can't this be about like Robin Banks? Hey, Robin Banks will be so interesting. Hey, Nikki. Hey, I don't know. I saw this movie about Robin Banks. You want to check it out? And then Nikki watches it and she's like, I got to check out my grasshopper. And I'm like, oh no, no.
But yeah, you can't choose what to get into.
I can't pick it for you.
I can't pick it either. It's like sometimes it's just a fucking YouTube video pops up about candle making. And I'm like, I'm going to learn all the things about candle making.
I know. Trust me.
I have a whole candle making workshop over there.
I just hope that your algorithm never takes you to a place where it's like, why you should burn down your house because it's bad for your aura.
So stupid.
But no, but for real though, you just, you know, when you're going to really do something, and like, there are times when like, yeah, you're flirting with things or whatever, but when you're going to really do it, I know you're going to do it.
Yeah.
And so there's no question about it.
Like, it has to be really stimulating. Yes. I think that's, for me, that's probably the number one thing. That if I was like, how do you choose? Well, it has to be very stimulating. It has to be creatively stimulating and intellectually stimulating. It has to feel like at the end of it, I have something to show like progress with, yes, where I'm like, I'm doing it. I'm doing the thing.
But like I said, you like, once you do it, like, you're gonna fucking do it like all the way. And that might surprise people, but you've never done anything that was so public before.
Yeah.
So like, I've seen you like go to the hilt about all kinds of shit, but like, normal people don't fucking see you go that extreme. And they're never going to know, because unless you tell them about what you're going through.
Yeah, I mean, I even was keeping poker pretty quiet on the down low for a long time, because I just didn't want, I wanted it to be just more like for me.
You didn't even talk about it for 6 months.
Yeah, for a long time.
And then, yeah, we took you to your first game at Commerce Casino, and like, then the snowball started going down the hill after that.
Yeah, but I started talking about it. It was more like a sprinkling here and there, like, not all the work in between.
Yes.
You know?
But that was the thing. It really was work.
Yeah.
It really was work. And
the fun kind. When you have fun doing the hard parts, that's how you know you love it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which is me and crypto. It, you know, not to make it about me, but honestly, that is
the best part. I told you the same thing way before you're talking about me into poker. Like, I told you about crypto that I feel like this is your thing even more than comedy.
Yep.
But we have to take a break.
Okay.
When we come back, we are going to answer more of your questions. I know that was a pretty long-winded question.
It was a good question.
I feel like it's a question that we don't normally talk about, like religion and spirituality and beliefs and hobbies. I think they're all kind of connected, honestly. Yes, it's too. It seems like two separate questions, but I think that that's all connected. I think creative forces are in alignment with like the out there, you know?
Yep. Big time.
Okay. BRB. So BRB, everybody, buy whatever we tell you to buy.
Please.
Hey, thanks for listening to our podcast. We just want to take a break to tell you to, like, thanks for listening to our podcast. And if you want to rate it, that would be really awesome for us. Like,
listen, we're on break. We're not talking to you like podcast hosts right now. We're just talking to you like people.
As a friend.
And we just want to say, please rate the show, because it helps out huge amounts.
Like, we're not desperate. We're, like, kind of desperate.
We're giving shout outs right now to all the people who are giving it ratings. So huge shout out right now to Brian Jorgensen. That was sick of you, dude. Thank you. God bless. Huge shout out right now to Mark W. in Springfield, Connecticut.
Back to our podcast.
Jenny Blake.
Hey, back to our podcast.
In Tuscany,
and
Florida.
Back to our podcast.
God bless you. Thank you.
Steven.
Thank you for supporting the show.
All right, we are back. And the next question is titled Update Plus Need Your Guidance. Ooh, we get an update. Okay, so these are both, like, both of the questions so far have been from people that have already messaged us. So, dear Nikki and Steve, starting off with compliments. Yay, you both are so wise and offer us such good advice. Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks.
I hope you know how appreciative I am of all that you do to give back to us. Y'all are amazing. You're so sweet. Thank you so much.
Sirs.
Thank you. I don't think it's a sirs.
No, but you don't know what sirs is.
Oh, I thought it was sirs.
Sirs is like everybody.
Oh, I thought it was just men.
S-E-R-S, sirs.
Yeah, I know, but I thought it was just a funny way to spell S-I-R-S.
It technically is.
Okay.
But it counts for everybody.
Gotcha.
Thank you.
So it's like mankind, even though women are included in there somehow. Right. It's always got to be a man.
For all mankind.
Label.
Is woman not a man?
Okay.
Kind?
I want to get into these questions more. You keep sidetracking us with all these little tangents.
You started it, dude.
No, I didn't. I was just saying it's not a sir.
Okay.
Possibly.
Take it away.
So I'm not sure if you remember me, but I emailed you in November of 2020 about my boyfriend having the dating apps to meet people to start his photography portfolio. I do remember this. He ended up meeting a girl named Becca, and it all went downhill from there. Fucking Becca. She made a comment about wanting to have a threesome with him and I, and that made me super uncomfortable because a quote-unquote friend shouldn't see you like that. Anyways, I held onto that relationship for another 2 years before realizing that
Holy
he wasn't the one.
Shit.
Wow, that's a long time. He was my first love, and we spent 3 years together total. He broke up with me over something that was his fault, and that was the last straw for me. I disconnected myself emotionally and was already physically disconnected. I broke it off, and I've never felt so free. So fast forwarding to about 2 months ago, I started talking more and more with this guy from work. He's such a sweet and generous guy. We made it official, and the past couple weeks have been really nice with him. We get along great, our humor matches each other, and we go through similar struggles. We both have pretty bad anxiety. I feel like his is more severe than mine. I tend to have more high-functioning anxiety and occasionally get crippled by it, but he goes through bad nausea on the daily. I've done my best to make him feel safe with me, and he has appreciated that so much. Today, me and him were both having a bad day. I needed him, and he couldn't be there for me because he was having an anxiety crash where his body was aching and literally giving out. And when he gets like that, he needs to sleep it off. And I understand because it happens to me as well. But he did text me and says he feels terrible that he couldn't be there for me. And it is the reason he had stayed single for 5 years. He didn't want to disappoint the people he loved. So I guess I wanted to hear your thoughts on this. How do you stay in a relationship where the support is there, but they can't always be there for you? How much should I have my own back? When does it become one-sided? I appreciate any feedback you have to give. Thank you so much. Marianne. Sirs.
Sirs. I don't know what that means.
What do you mean you don't know what it means?
Well, it's like so she needed him.
Yeah.
And he's like, yo, I can't even come right now.
Come?
Like, I can't come over.
Oh.
Like, I can't come.
I was like, it's not sexual.
No, no.
Okay.
But he's like, I can't.
Yeah, he was going through crippling anxiety.
So he's like, yo, I'm out.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I actually completely understand this because I was in a relationship where we both had depression and anxiety, and when I was down, it's not like he could pull me up, like, but then when he was down, I would try to pull him up too, you know. It was like, but it was hard because we were always kind of like in the same slump together and like spiraling.
That's bad though.
It's bad. Yeah, it sucks. I'm not gonna lie, like, I think this works much better because Steve, so
I'm a fucking spaceman.
This is how I've seen like a lot of like really long term couples stick together, is one is very turbulent emotionally.
Yes.
And the other one is like super
rock steady.
Super steady. Not that you don't have emotions. Like,
no.
you have emotions and you go up and down, but
I'm very available.
You don't get like crippling anxiety. Like, we don't have the same set of things.
No.
And what's hard is like, I like this in my past relationship. I was like, oh, he actually gets me because he gets it too. So like, we understand each other. And then you feel like, well, this is definitely like the person that I'm supposed to be with, because we like, who else would understand like this crazy thing and like put up with it and blah, blah, blah. And he felt really guilty when he couldn't. It was the same thing where he like felt guilty that he couldn't like be there for me when I needed him.
Maybe this is a stupid thing, right? But not to cut you off.
It's okay.
But there's this thing that exists in my brain. Like, when I was a kid, it didn't matter what I was going through. If my mother was crying, which was like every day.
Yeah.
I had to flush it and make sure that I took care of my mom, because like, she needed me. And so it doesn't mean that I'm putting something away for myself for later. It's just like in the immediate right now, I got you.
Is it because you feel like you're more emotionally stable than the person that needs it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just, I got this. I'll deal with this later. So yeah. It's like if I'm dealing with something that's like, you know, whatever the fuck it is. Like a recent example is like what happened to me with Luna.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That was fucking wild.
Yeah.
But I remember this is a fucking funny thing that happened too. Nikki comes home and she honestly probably lost like what, 800?
300
at 300. Poker. And like, guys, I'm not kidding. I could simplify this and dumb this down and make Nikki look silly,
mm-hmm.
but that's not really what's funny about this. Like, what's actually funny about this is the contrast just in what had happened to me and what Nikki needed from me because of the immediacy of it, right? So, like, what I had done with crypto, I had been in for like fucking a year and a half, right?
Yeah.
I was buying Luna, it was $5, and this thing went up to fucking $120. And, like, you know, I sold some off, de-risked some, but goddamn, I could have got way more off the table, right? Would have been so sick. So I lost like $1 million, no question.
Mm-hmm.
In like fucking 48 hours, probably watched like $1 million turn like 50 cents.
Mm-hmm.
So fun. Then, and I'm not kidding, this is probably like 48 hours later,
mm-hmm.
Nikki comes home and she's like, you know, into poker, and she hadn't hit yet with the World Series of Poker.
Yeah.
Or even the $12,000 that you got from that other win that you got just before the World Series of Poker. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Nikki's like, she lost some, like, $300.
Yeah, $300.
And she's fucking devastated for like 18 hours.
But it wasn't about the $300.
Exactly, yeah. I know that. But it's about just the game.
It's funny zoomed out.
It's so fucking funny that it's insane.
And then I came home like, I lost $300, but it wasn't.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
But it's not like I had to put, it's not like I had to you know, I'm like, oh, like, I had to wait. My tears had to wait.
Yeah.
I wasn't crying. Like, I was fine, relatively. Mm-hmm. Like, it does suck. There's no question about it. It fucking sucks. But it was really made even more, honestly, hilarious and fun for me that Nikki was this devastated after losing $300, after I lost $1 million. And it was a really beautiful moment for me, honestly. Mm-hmm. There's a thing that I have about me. I don't know what it is, but I swear to God, if you light an object a certain way, I'll find the brightest spot.
Mm-hmm.
I just find the light in things. I just do. It's why my mother calls me her light.
Yeah.
Right. I think that Nikki would agree with that statement
absolutely.
For how I am interpersonally. Yeah. And it's just that nothing is
That's
ever
the part
grim.
That people don't. I'm waiting for the like. Some people have known it, maybe in Crypto Corner or whatever. But like when you say that people don't see the sitcom wife part, I feel like people don't see that this like bright light part that you have the uncanny ability to really bring like a light to dark situations.
Dude, there's nothing more beautiful and more hilarious than illumination,
mm-hmm.
right? And sometimes like. People think that like laughing at something means you're making fun of it, but
no.
you're not.
It's just the humor, the irony.
It's the irony. Yeah. You could zoom outside of yourself and not think of yourself as the main character, right? Mm-hmm. You're looking outside
of show.
It. At the show, exactly. Yeah. The show is so fucking funny.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, because like when the main character trips and falls, he's not laughing.
Yeah.
But like when you zoom out, that shit's funny.
Exactly.
And that's it.
We both think this way,
I know,
too.
I know. It's beautiful.
Because we like all be crying and like laughing through crying because it's so fucking funny. Yeah.
Dude, that's the thing. That's what I mean, dude. That's the symbiosis, right? It's like we have this verve. It's like uncommunicated. Honestly, I can look at Nikki. She can look at me, and we'll probably know exactly what the fuck we're thinking.
Yeah,
it's just this beautiful verve that we have because we see the world in the same way.
Yeah,
and we don't always communicate the world in the same way, but we see the world in the same way. So mm-hmm. I can maybe communicate some of those moments a little bit differently than Nikki, and Nikki communicate some of those moments a little bit differently than me, but. The way that we come together on those moments, it's completely compatible with how we view it. So
it's not that this is not what they're going through though. So
yeah, true.
With her guy, I don't want to give you, I don't want to shut it down for you right now. I just feel like I relate hard to what this situation is. And I being on the other side of it, I can now in hindsight be like, oh, that wasn't like as cool as I thought it was going to be, because I thought he would, because we would understand each other and like the mental health aspects of each other, that it would be easier, or like we would love each other more because of it. But it actually was really hard because it did start to feel one-sided, and it wasn't necessarily his fault in some regards. Like there were other things he did that were fucked up, but like the mental health part was just a hard part, because it's like, when he's depressed, he's just going to shut off and he can't physically be there for you. He can't emotionally, mentally, physically be there for you. So if you happen to be going through something at the same time, he's just not going to be able to be there for you. Whereas like maybe you can be there for him in some ways or regards, and it sucks. And it's not like he even acknowledges that that's why he's been single for 5 years. And I get that. I think that you guys both need people that don't have those things. And in the beginning, yeah, it's hard to explain it to someone like Steve, who doesn't get crazy anxiety attacks. Like, he doesn't go through, like, deep depression. I have to explain to him, like, why I'm having a panic attack over something. And I had to explain to him how to treat me during the panic attack parts. But now knowing that, like, he's so much more supportive, and like the kind of the compliment in my life that I would need for my needs, you know. And I think it's just getting in tune with what your needs are and not lying to yourself, because in the past I was like, well, I don't need that, you know, I can take care of my own, and like, you know, I can grow up, be a big girl about it, and like, I don't need my partner to be this like rock for me. I know it's not his fault, and you want to be like caring about it and empathetic to what he's going through, because, you know, he's got crippling anxiety and depression. But you have to be, you know, pretty honest with yourself if it's that's something that you want to be with long term, because I think it's kind of like a love language, where even if you really like somebody and you really love, like, if you love somebody, but you can't speak the same language with them, they can't be there for you and like be there for your needs, even if they don't, even if they want to be there, they're just not capable of it. You have to be honest with yourself if that's something that you want to stick around for, or if maybe there's someone better out there for you.
How would you break up with somebody who's going through something like that, though?
You know, it would have to be over conversations. Maybe you could work through it. Maybe you could guys see a therapist together, but it doesn't even sound like they're a couple yet. They've been seeing him for two months, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not there, so feel it out. But I will say that this sounds extremely similar to a 2-year relationship that I went through. And I tried to hold out, and it made me sadder and sadder and sadder. And I didn't want him to feel guilty for it. I mean, he did other things that I found out about later, but like this particular issue, I didn't want him to feel guilty about it. So I kind of like sacrificed my own happiness to be like, well, he just can't be there for me, and I still love him, so I'll stay with him, rather than like, maybe there's someone out there that actually could support you better and there's more of a symbiosis with. I just didn't know there was anything else out there.
Yeah,
because I hadn't experienced it. I wish you the best. I hope that maybe like you guys can work something out, like go see a therapist, see if there's something that other couples have gone through that maybe share similar issues.
Yeah.
I just don't know personally.
It's up to you, man. Compatibility is hard.
Yeah.
It's hard to just nail down hearing it over the message on the emails.
Oh, this is another one about religion. This one is titled, "Should I leave my religion per Steve's request?"
I probably did ask that. No,
hey, Nikki and Steve, Iceman. This is a longtime podcast listener, Rocky from Texas. Sorry about my last email bringing up the Mandela effect. Different rabbit hole this time. I'm having doubts on staying in my cult. I mean, religion. Wow, why is everyone shifting out of their religion right now? This is crazy.
Apparently, we're leading the way, though.
All right.
I'm dressed for this.
Yeah. The summer of 2020, something magical happened. The Broadway musical Hamilton hit Disney Plus. I never thought I'd be able to watch Hamilton. I had heard about it for years, and the fact that it was hundreds of dollars for tickets and had a waiting list. After watching it, I was forever changed. It was amazing. The hip hop, the story, the awesomeness. I was all in. I would not throw away my shot. I didn't even know it was on Disney Plus. I haven't seen Hamilton yet.
This guy just found out he loves musicals.
In New York, you can be a new man. I studied the play. I studied the actors, everything about it. But now, 2 years later, I'm beginning to doubt the holy script. There's a line in the play where they say Martha Washington named her feral tomcat after him, and someone says that's true. But after researching it on my own, I discovered, in fact, it was not true. Also, spoilers for the play, which is a story that really happened in the late 1700s and early 1800s. So, spoiler alert, probably over. The climax of the story in the play is the duel between Aaron Burr and Alexander Hamilton.
A classic.
In the play, they duel over Burr losing the presidency to Thomas Jefferson. But in real life, it was over another election in New York a few years later. So, yes, for the play, it is more dramatic for it to be the presidency, but my doubt for the holy script is now strong. What other things could also be wrong in the play? Lin-Manuel Miranda, how could he betray me? I mean, he wrote this, Moana, and Encanto. How much talent can someone have? Should I stay or should I forsake the holy script and follow someone or something else? Thanks for your help. Thoughts, Rocky from Texas.
Rocky, surely this is a bit.
Yeah.
And congratulations.
Yeah, that was great. I fell for it.
We don't believe you.
I was really yeah. Like waiting for the...
Yeah, we got it.
I was like, I thought they were going to bring up religion the play.
But good for you.
Amazing.
Amazing.
It's truly a great piece of writing.
Well written.
We appreciate that.
Thank you.
That was great. Thanks, Rocky.
Thanks, Rocky.
And yes, burn it.
We sniffed it out.
Burn it.
Too easy, Rocky. Do better.
Burn it.
Do better.
Okay, this one's called Rediscovering My Passions. Hey, Nikki and Steve, I wanted to start by saying that I love listening to your podcast. Thank you for all your advice and sharing your life lessons with us. Not only is it entertaining and educational, but it gets me reflecting a lot on my own life and problems. That's awesome. That's exactly what we were hoping, that like maybe if we fail at enough shit and then share what we went through, that you could avoid slipping down the same path.
Absolutely.
I also think you're both so wonderful, and seeing how much you love and take care of each other really makes my heart happy. Nikki, I could literally listen to you talk about anything or watch you do anything and be entertained. Sorry if that comes off creepy/stalkerish. Oh my God, thank you so much.
She cares.
That's really sweet.
Listening to interested people talk about what they're interested in is my thing.
Yeah, I've always said that too.
I enjoy it.
Steve, I really try to understand your crypto talks, and even though I don't, because I just can't wrap my brain around it, listening to you talk and defend something so passionately is so interesting to me. Again,
I love it.
Yeah. Talking about people being interested in something.
I only love Nikki more. That's it.
Aw. Now, I guess I should put a little context for the question I have. I'm about to be 30, and my quote-unquote dream job is to be an author, and it has been my life goal since probably the age of 4. For forever, I've wanted that more than anything, but I've yet to finish any of my projects. It's terrible. I feel like I have so much talent and potential that I'm wasting because, for some reason, I can never seem to finish anything. I can have the whole thing outlined beginning to end, character charts made up, practice scenes for dialogue, etc., but once I get 3/4 of the way in, I just completely blank and can't bring myself to write another word. Everything feels wrong, and I can't find myself just going back and correcting things rather than moving on to the ending. I know exactly how I want it to end, too, but I just can't get it out onto the pager. I probably have at least 5 projects that have met this fate. I even thought about starting something quote-unquote simpler and maybe doing a poetry book first, since those come a little easier to me. But whenever I think of writing content for it, I blank. I don't know if that's because I'm always drained from my job. I work in the restaurant industry, or I'm just lazy or something. But I guess what I'm asking is, how do I get myself to refocus on my goal? Is this a sign that my dream is dead? Am I just not passionate enough about it anymore? Should I quit? Or am I just being a lazy ass who needs a kick into gear? Sorry this got long. I guess the context wasn't so little after all. Thank you again for all you do. I appreciate every second of it. So cute that you think the passion's dead. Absolutely is it not?
You love it too much. That's the problem. Look, honestly, this is why like most people have regrets about, oh, I should have asked that girl out.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't perfect.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have the perfect end. So like I was waiting for the perfect time. You know, you understand?
Yeah, it had to be perfect. And it wasn't
perfect. It wasn't. Go figure. No fucking shit, dude. It's never gonna be perfect. Guess what, dude? Guess what? Mm-hmm. Let me tell you. Let me answer the phone for you. Here's what happens. Your dream project gets picked up. Then they take it. Then guess what? They have somebody direct it. They have somebody fucking produce it. They have somebody edit it. They have somebody do sound. They have somebody hire the actors. They have somebody do casting, right? So like your initial version of whatever the fuck you thought was going to happen
mm-hmm.
gets sucked into outer space and distributed a million times before it ever even gets seen by one person anyway. So like this perfect bullshit that you're doing to yourself, you're just hurting yourself.
It's a self-sabotaging thing.
It's this
thing where like you think it's because you fear failure, but you actually fear your success.
Yes.
Like you even said it, like you know how much potential and talent you have. And there's a quote by, I can't remember who, and I'm probably going to botch the quote, but it's like, we're not scared of failing. We're scared that we're powerful beyond measure. Like we're something about that.
Yeah, well, it's not good enough, right? For them, you're right. Because like the goal is maybe that people will see it as like, wow, this person's powerful beyond measure. But then...
No, they're scared like of unleashing that power subconsciously. So they wrap it up as like being scared of failure.
I that's true. I think that that's true for a lot of people. But I know people who are so obsessed with perfection,
yeah,
that they only embrace failure. And yeah, I think that that's maybe what's going on here, right? So it's like, you know, I got a buddy who just fucking can't shut the fuck up about everything he's ever put his hands on that was never his. He can't shut up about all the flaws of it.
Mm-hmm.
But then he can't ever make a script of his own.
Mm-hmm.
He'll never make a script of his own, yep, ever, not one time fucking ever, because he doesn't want anyone to be able to judge that the way he judges other people's,
yeah,
shit. So like he judges everything through the lens of, well, why isn't it perfect? And then he looks at his own shit and it's never, ever going to be perfect, so we won't even finish it.
Yep.
So it's just a fucking fallacy anyway.
I know quite a few people like that.
So why spend the energy?
Right.
But it's like, why are you spending the energy to begin with then? So, you know, look, people love to shit on me and go, man, Steve, how many movies you've done? And if you add up the IMDb score, is that even as many movies? Probably, by the way. Just barely. But probably. So go fuck yourself. No, I'm kidding. So like, you know. But that's the thing. You have to embrace the process.
Exactly.
And I was really bad at that, by the way. I was really bad at that initially. Really bad and combative initially about embracing the process. I would be putting up fights in meetings.
Yeah.
We have to protect the integrity of this joke. Oh, this joke has to live and all this shit.
Yeah.
Stuff that didn't matter later. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You just think like everything
it's
is
so
a
precious
mountain when it's just a part of the path.
It sounds like you have writer's block, and I've heard some cures for this are to not think about how you're going to connect the dots. Like, so when you sit down to write, don't think about how you have to finish this project. You have to finish the ending. You have to get to the ending. Just focus on, you have to write a page. Just focus on writing a page. And this is why, because after you, like, if you force yourself to just write a page, even if you hate it after and you crumple it up and you throw it away in the garbage, just getting in the flow of writing a page, you'll start to like unlock that creative flow, that thing that goes inside you and like creates all the ideas that you want and puts them into a physical manifestation. That happens when you're in a flow state and you're not thinking and overanalyzing it. And the way to get there is by not looking at the bigger picture, but by just even making yourself write a paragraph, like not even a page, maybe just a paragraph. And once you write that paragraph, you'll find that you want to keep going. And you, like, I've heard of writers getting out of writer's blocks like this, where they just force themselves to write a page. And then before they know it, they wrote 35 pages.
Yeah. Because if it's unconnected, I think that's the key, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to write a page for fun.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with my
fucking
script.
It has to be for
fun. It's
yeah.
for fun. I don't give a fuck. It has nothing to do with my script. I remember I was actually at the end of the second Thinning movie, which, you know, these are my bread and butter, baby.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I remember, you know, the studio had, they were like, hey, we want some kind of an ending where it's like an abridged to like maybe another movie. So then it was like, yo, here's a decree given from on high. You guys have to add something that doesn't exist right now, but you have to like create like a,
yeah.
You know, a bridge that gets cut off early. It's a cliffhanger, right? So then it's like, okay, now we have to do that. But by the way, I always had great experiences with a lot of the places that I made movies with. But you do have to surrender a part of your vision, your perfect vision. Because like, you know, we all read books differently, right? When you're envisioning what you're reading. Everyone's envisioning different things. Like when that's happening, like you have to kind of surrender yourself to the process. And, you know, many people might hear that and hear me and go, okay, well, he's talking about how, you know, you make something and then everyone else fucks it up later. But I'm not saying that. I'm saying it's actually a beautiful part of the process when you surrender this thing to the next stage that you're not involved with as much.
In control of.
Yeah, you're in control of it in a way, but like really the people who are paying for it are in control of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so like they're going to make more of the decisions than you, and you have to surrender yourself to the process because, oh, really? Are you going to wardrobe it? Are you going to act in all the parts? Like, are you just creating a fucking YouTube video from 2013 where you're wearing a bunch of wigs? You know what I mean? And like, how satisfying is that for the viewer? So like, you have to eventually just give it up to the process.
Yeah.
And that's a beauty. There's a beauty in that too. So embrace the beauty of the unknown. Don't do this bullshit where you feel like you have to corral everything into your own fucking gates.
It was Nelson Mandela that did this quote. I was going to say that. Nice. That's who was in my head, but then I didn't want to be wrong and look silly.
Love it.
But it was Nelson Mandela. Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, and fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We were born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. It is not just some of us, it is in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we consciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. So sometimes I think that when you get down to the very end of things, this is, and that maybe I'm just relating too hard, but like I have a lot of unfinished things because I get too scared of it's partly perfectionism. I've written it off as perfectionism. But when I heard stuff like that, it is kind of like a, what if I think too highly of myself and this isn't the like as cool as I thought it was gonna be. So now it has to be even more perfect to make sure that I am right about myself because now my self-worth is tied into this project, you know? And sure. So I'm like, you know, I start to doubt myself and then it never gets finished because I'm like, I have so many videos that I've written that I never made that I was so passionate about, but I never made them because I was too scared of subconsciously. I just like, it has to work the way I want it to be. And if I can't make it that way, then I don't want it to be. But there's another quote that's like, don't die with your music still in you. And I think you still got a lot of music. That was Dr. Wayne Dyer. And I think you still got a lot of that music in you. So you haven't even tapped into it yet. You haven't played any of the music because it's just, you know, kind of sitting there unfinished. And you're blaming it on you not being passionate anymore, but you are really passionate about it still.
Of course you're passionate about it. That's the problem.
Yeah. And so just let it go.
Just chill out a little bit.
It's not precious.
Chill out.
Actually, you should make it your goal to fail at it.
Look, people will judge it anyway, dude.
Yeah.
People, trust me. People can't wait to tell you how much you suck at something.
You're like a perfect thing. It's,
yeah, you're
it's
never like going to so have a perfect judged. Thing. You're going to have something that you're going to judge more than anybody else does. So
yep.
Just do it.
Just do it. Do it. Just do it.
Exactly. Like what Al Pacino said.
Mm.
Oh. In Any Given Sunday. A great movie.
Okay. All right, guys. Well, that's all the questions we have for now. If you have a question you'd like to ask us, there's like one more, but I feel like we just ran out of time. So
yeah, we'll
get to it on the next one. And if you have a question that you would like to ask us about anything, we are not experts on it. Obviously, disclaimer, don't sue us. But podcast@nikki.limo is where you can send those questions. That's podcast@nikki.limo.
Love it.
Okay.
Every day make progress. Every step be fruitful. And yet there will lay before you an ever-lengthening, ever-ascending, ever-improving path. But this, so far from discouraging, only adds to the joy and glory of the climb.
Is that general that you're into?
That is Winston Churchill. I believe that so deeply, creatively, yeah. About all things. It is the process that is beautiful.
I like how all these questions kind of tied into each other.
They did.
They're about like religion and passion, and I feel like they're all kind of intertwined.
Yep.
Like, I think creative force, like God is a creator and like we are made in his image. And I think that the creative force is what works through us.
When people talk about how they climbed Everest, which frankly, they mostly just use, you know, a lot of these Sherpas now to just like carry them up there. But... When they do it, talk about the peak is the least interesting part. Like really? Talking about the climb is the whole fucking story, isn't it?
Yeah.
So there you go.
You got to drink like water in small sips.
You got to bring enough oxygen tanks too. Bring a tent.
I'm way too lazy to climb Everest.
Same. I'll never.
Holy shit. Unless I have a Sherpa. About laziness.
I need a team of Sherpas carrying me up there on 12 of them.
It's too cold.
It's
like,
so
honestly,
cold.
The second I get out of the car, like if we're at the base of Mount Everest, I'm like, ooh, it's so cold.
And you know what I'll probably do? I'll actually probably do this. I'll chop her up there, take a selfie, chop her fucking back down.
No, the choppers can't. They freeze up there. That's why you have to climb it.
No, but you have to do it certain times because they can chop her up there. I've seen it.
Well, I don't.
Trust me, I made sure this vision was accurate before.
Well, I'll kiss you goodbye before you go because there's no way I'm ever going over there.
What if I chop her up there and then I wingsuit down?
I don't care. Live your life, bro.
All right, we'll get there.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll do it in VR. All right, we'll be back.
See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.